Hey y'all, I'm Carrie.
And I'm Mike.
And this is Monstrous.
This episode contains topics and language that may not be suitable for all listeners, and topics that may be triggering for some. Listener discretion is advised.
Okay, so as you can tell from the intro, Mandy is not here this week. This week we have Mike with us in place of her. And Mike knows nothing about the case today.
Nothing.
So, normally I would throw a bunch of numbers right off the bat. But for this week, I'm going to save everything for the last. I have a lot of information that I don't want to get lost with telling you today's case, so I'm going to save it for the end.
Okay.
So, you ready for the start of a rough but very important month?
I guess.
Okay. So, today's case isn't gruesome, but it's disturbing and really messed up. So, I don't really think this one's going to fuck you up, but it might. And it'll definitely make you rethink putting your child on a school bus. And this case is the reason that our children will never ride a school bus. So, I rode a bike myself, as I'm sure nearly everyone in our generation did, and nothing happened, but you never know. And the idea that this could happen to our boys stresses me the fuck out. You'll see why at the end. Okay, so on to the case. So the year is 1976 in Chowchilla, California. It's the second to last day of summer school. Dairy Lane Elementary School has let out for the day. 26 children, aged 5 to 14, piled into a school bus driven by Frank Edward Ray. Frank was also known as Ed, so that's what I'm going to call him from this point forward. So for most of his life, Ed was a farmer, but at some point he had decided to stop doing that and become a school bus driver. And the kids he shuttled to and from school loved him. He was part of the reason that these kids loved summer school. It was reported that it had been less of school and more like a summer camp. According to a report from CNN, the kids loved it so much that they had actually created and signed a petition to keep the summer school program open for 2 more weeks.
Which I don't think I would have done that.
No, I wouldn't have.
But that's still really cute. Either way. So, anyway, this group of 26 happy children were headed home from their fun-filled day at school. Ed was driving down a rural road when he noticed a white, like, creeper van. The epitome of a creeper van, okay? Parked sideways in the road. So it's like this. This forced Ed to maneuver around the school bus. As he did, this weird creeper van had the hood up. Being the kind of man that Ed was, he stopped the bus and called out of the window to see if anyone needed help. Because obviously he thought the van had broken down. And he wanted to make sure that whoever was in the van was okay. As soon as Ed had offered his help, 3 men with pantyhose over their heads jumped onto the bus with guns, sawed-off shotguns at that. These men were 24-year-olds Fred Woods, James Schoenfeld, I think that's how you say it, and 22-year-old Richard Schoenfeld. All three came from wealthy families, and Fred Woods actually had a trust fund that was worth over $100 million just sitting there waiting.
A big chunk of change.
Yeah. So these three demanded that Ed go to the back of the bus. They screamed at the kids to shut up and follow orders. So obviously the kids are terrified. They're freaking out. And Ed is doing his best to calm the kids, telling them, quote, just be quiet, sit down, do what they say. Which didn't really help because, based off reporting, Ed was really harsh towards the kids when he said this. And that was not the normal, calm, cool Ed that they loved. So this, of course, freaked them out even more. But he's being firm to try and make sure that they get that he's being serious. He's like, just sit down, be quiet, and just listen to them. And he's being like, you know, because as the adult, he knows how serious this is. And he knows that if they don't do as these men say, they could get hurt. So like I said, these men have pantyhose over their head with the legs like, you know, like hanging down
yeah.
over the sides of their heads. So basically they look like a bunch of fucking idiots. The youngest child on the bus was a 5-year-old little girl named Monica. One of these morons drives the bus. There it is. The other one points the shot-off shotgun at a group of fucking kids. And in the midst that all this is going on, little Monica asks the guy if he's the Easter Bunny.
Wow. What the fuck?
Well, she's 5.
But still.
Okay, put yourself in the mind of a 5-year-old.
Ain't no Easter Bunny look like.
No. No. She's 5. She doesn't know. Okay, so the guy driving the bus drove through a bamboo field. So this scared the kids even more because they're being, you know, thrown all around the bus because this fucking twat waffle doesn't know how to use a damn road. When the bus comes to a stop, there's a second van waiting. The man pulled one of the vans up to the door of the back of the bus and forced half the kids into that van and then forced Ed and the remaining children into the second van. These vans had blacked out windows and were outfitted with wood paneling. This was done in an effort to keep footprints from being left behind. That's why they pulled the van as close as they could to the bus, like out the emergency hatch door at the back. So they would have each child jump from the back of the bus into the van.
Gotcha.
So these kids were crammed into these dark blacked out vans and they drove for God knows who long to who knows where in 100-degree weather. Can you fucking imagine?
Yeah, it would suck. Not pleasant at all.
No. Okay, so we have these moronic spoon-fed twat waffles who have just kidnapped 26 children and their bus driver. Now they drive these kids who are crying and freaking out with no food, nothing to drink, and no bathroom breaks for 11 hours.
What the fuck did you call them? Moronic spoonful of what?
Moronic spoon-fed twat waffles.
What the fuck? Okay. Whatever the fuck that came from. Never heard that shit before. It's fucking crazy.
But they drove these kids. No food, nothing to drink, no bathroom breaks for 11 hours. I can't even go to the bathroom. Or I can't even not go to the bathroom for 11 hours. Imagine a little 5-year-old.
Yep, probably like multiple.
Like. So, anyway, back in Chowchilla, parents are obviously freaking out because their children have just vanished. Police are called and a search ensues. They begin by searching for the bus, and of course the parents are there with the police, searching literally everywhere. And it didn't take long for them to call in the FBI, who call for an air search. And this is how they found the bus hidden within that bamboo field. The bus is found, but that relief does not last long, because the kids are not there. They find the tire tracks that lead away from the bus, but no feet print. The police and FBI knew right away whoever had pulled this off pulled a second vehicle up to the bus in order to avoid feet prints, then loaded the children up and abandoned the bus. So, now back in the vans, the kids are screaming and they're crying, they're vomiting all over the place, it's just a fucking mess. In one van, the older kids are trying to console the younger ones while they themselves are silently losing it. In the other van, Ed is trying to stay calm because he's responsible for these kids, and then half of them were separated from him, so he's also worried about what's happening to them, all while he's trying to console the kids that are with him. So there's a lot of chaos going on. After nearly 12 hours in these vans, they're driven off the road and again thrown around, because, you know, we don't use roads around here in California, apparently. Then the vans stop. So the kidnappers reach in and pull Ed out, then shut the door. Then one at a time, the kidnappers would open the door, grab whatever kid was closest, pull them out, and shut the door. They did this over and over again until both vans were empty. Could you imagine being in that van and these fucking idiots with pantyhose over their damn face reaching in and grabbing each one of you? And then just shutting the door. Okay, so I'm sure all of our listeners, maybe you, I don't know, are probably internally screaming at me, hoping they are not killing Ed and the kids one by one, which they aren't. I know it seems that way, but they are. There's awful people, and I don't know, felt the need to terrify kids even more than they already had. So, I'm going to tell you what they did. As they pull each child out of the van, one man asks for their name, one asks for their age, and the other asks for their address. They also took a little piece of their clothing. They do this with both vans. The van with Ed in it is the one that the kidnappers do first. Then the second van, the oldest child, who is 14 years old, and this little boy is so amazing. Like, he's a real life hero for these little itty bitty babies. His name is Michael Marshall. He said the kids in his van, in the van with him, just clung to him. Because remember, these are, you know, 5, 6, 7, and 8 year olds. And he's so big that they latched to him for safety and consolement. So like I said earlier, the youngest was Monica, who was 5 years old. Michael later said that they were the last two in the van. And that this little girl clung to him for dear life. The kidnapper opened the door of the van and reached for her. But Michael said he couldn't bear handing her over to him, not knowing what was going to happen to her. So he pushed Monica behind him, and he went before her. He later told CBS News, quote, "I had to take her hands from mine and rip and tear them apart so it would say it would be okay and go with him and leave her. That was so hard."
Mm-hmm. What?
You're just, like, shaking your head like somebody can see you.
Nope.
So, like, this little boy is scared. But he knows that this little girl, only being 5 years old, is even more scared than he is. So he's like, I have to be brave. It's just awful that he had to do that. Anyway. Okay, so what the fuck was going on? And why was this happening? Well, in the months before the kidnapping, the kidnappers had buried a moving van in a ditch in the California rock and gravel quarry. Once they pulled everyone out of the two vans, they had each of the children and Ed climb down a ladder into this moving van that they had buried. Like, literally buried a giant hole in the ground and then put this moving van into this hole and then covered it up.
Okay.
Yeah. Inside this van, they had placed mattresses, water, peanut butter, bread, and cereal. Enough of each for one meal.
Well, they're only holding them hostage for so long, right?
Yeah, but there's 26 kids, plus Ed. All of those things were enough for one person to eat one meal.
Okay.
Like, they did not think this through very well. Then on one side of the van, there were boxes with holes cut into them for makeshift toilets. So they pile Ed and all these 26 kids into this moving van that's buried under the rock quarry. They pulled the ladder up and they were like, oh, we'll be back for you. Put a cover on the manhole that was at the top of the van. Then put two truck batteries over that manhole cover and then buried the top of the van and they left.
What about ventilation for them?
Yeah, we'll get there. So these moronic fucking idiots just buried 27 people under between 6 to 12 feet. Of dirt and rock. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Inside the van, they said they could hear the dirt and gravel being thrown on top of the van. They just kind of sat there knowing that they had just been buried alive. And some said once they got down there and they began to hear the dirt, they said, this is our coffin. These are children that are saying this.
Mm-hmm. Very traumatizing.
One of their survivors, her name is Cornejo Labrandria, I believe that's how you say it. It might be wrong. Sorry. She was 10 at the time, and she said, quote, "There were times we all thought we were dying. I promised God if I survived this, I would be the best little girl. I'd be the best little girl my whole entire life." 10 years old.
Thinking that she's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
They said this was awful, which honestly, I can't fucking imagine being stuck in a hole in the ground, alive. But as a child, this is literally what nightmares are made of. Their bathroom is a box with holes cut into it. And remember, 26 children, and they have little tiny baby bladders. So the entire van smells like pee and feces. Some of the kids are throwing up because it's California in the summer. Which, I looked it up, and I did some digging. On July 16th of 1976, because remember, they were kidnapped on the afternoon of the 15th, then drove for 11 hours, so now it's the 16th. It was 90 degrees where they were found. And that does not include the heat index that day, which would have made it even hotter.
I mean, if they're 6 to 12 feet underneath the ground, it should be at least cool.
Well, yeah, it would be cooler, but it's still hot. So with them being that far underground, it's probably, I don't know, probably, I'd say 80 degrees at least underground.
At least.
So it's hot. Especially to little kids like this. Oh, I lost my place again. Okay. So they're trapped underground in this stinky fucking heat box. They're becoming dehydrated. Some of them are most likely on the verge of heat stroke. And these are kids, so their bodies can only handle so much before they finally give out. And of course, they're all out of their minds hysterical. Ed said the kids were all crying for their moms. Michael said it would be completely quiet, and then all of a sudden one of the little kids would start crying, and then the whole lot of them would erupt in tears and just bawling. Like, this has got to be the worst kind of nightmare to be trapped in. Honestly. So, they of course eat all the food that they're given, because these fucking jackholes thought that the little bit would feed 27 people. So, you asked about ventilation.
Yeah.
These fucking idiots made a makeshift ventilation system, because if not, it would have suffocated right away. And these guys wanted them alive, not dead, obviously, hence the food. The ventilation system, if you want to call it that, were just fans that they put into the van, and they were battery operated.
Didn't last that long, probably.
No. Then they also had like a dryer vent hose. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
That they had left like sticking out of the dirt above ground, and a fan blowing into it, which led to the movie van.
Okay.
Great ventilation system happening.
They tried.
Eventually, the batteries die. So now they have no ventilation system. So now, they're all slowly suffocating and heading toward heat strokes. Then, as if this wasn't worse enough, the roof begins to cave in underneath the weight of all the dirt and gravel.
Couldn't imagine.
So the roof is like bowing in, and they said that they could hear the cracking of it, and dirt slowly begins to fall into the van.
Scary.
So now, all the kids are freaking out even more, believing that they're actually going to die underground. Another survivor, Jennifer, told CBS News that once this began to happen, they were all in full panic mode. She said, quote, "We thought, and they said, the older kids and Ed, if we're going to die, we're going to die trying to get out of here." So this is when Ed and Michael, along with a couple of the other bigger boys, like they were younger but bigger, they took the mattresses and stacked them up underneath the manhole. And they began to try to move it, but it wouldn't budge because, as we know, but they didn't know at the time, there were two truck batteries on the cover. Michael said that the kids were cheering him on, saying, "Come on, Michael, you can do it," pushing him to believe that he could get them out. Ed, Michael, and some of the younger but bigger boys pushed on this cover for what they said was hours. They were sweating, dying, and then suddenly one of the kids looked and says, quote, "It's moving. I see it moving." So together, they pushed the cover out of the way, and once it's moved, they realized the kidnappers had placed a wooden box over the entrance. So Ed had Michael squeeze through the hole to get into the wooden box and see what was going on with the outside. When he got up there, he realized the outside of this box was just earth. It was literally nothing but dirt. So he began to dig. Michael and Ed, working together, dug and dug for what they think was about another hour or so until they saw sunlight and then even more sunlight. All the kids were freaking out, and the more light they saw, the more they freaked out. Then they're like, you know, where are we? First off. Second off, what's up there waiting for us? Because at this point, they realized they had no idea what the kidnappers wanted, why they were taken in the first place, but what else could they do? They had to get out of there. So one by one, they hoist each other up out of the hole. Thankfully, the kidnappers were not there waiting for them. So If the kidnappers weren't there watching, where were they? They were at home, taking a fucking nap. These guys just kidnapped 26 children.
And they're at home taking a nap.
Yes.
Must have been tiring.
Apparently, because they're just like, oh, let's just sleep. So apparently they had tried to call in their $5 million ransom demand to the police station. But the lines were jammed up and busy because the families of these missing kids, along with the media, were calling nonstop. So they couldn't get through. So they decided, you know what? We're tired after all that. So let's just take a nap and we'll try again later. They're not going nowhere anyway.
Right.
Like, what the fuck? So once out of this hole in the earth, the group saw a man inside the rock quarry working. He looks over after hearing something and he sees kids just popping up out of the ground. Could you fucking imagine being at work one day and you look over and here's just kids just popping up out of the ground?
I don't know what the fuck you think.
Exactly. Like, what? Oh, this man goes over to the kids and Ed and says, quote, the world has been looking for you. Like, yeah, thanks, guy. You know, can you take us back to civilization now? We'd appreciate it. It would turn out that they had been in this hole for 12 hours. And they were more than 100 miles away from Chowchilla, which is where they were taken from. The police were called and they came, obviously. They had taken them to the only place that was safe for them to go, which was the local jail. So now the kids are freaking out, thinking that they're going to jail. Like, what they had just been through wasn't enough. You couldn't take them anywhere but a freaking jail. So the kids were taken into the rooms that they had at the jail. There they were checked out by doctors. They were photographed, interviewed. And in the end, everyone on the bus, Ed and all 26 children, were found and returned home relatively unharmed. There was shock and trauma, of course. Some had heat stroke, but physically, everyone was fine. At the station, each of the kids were given apples and soda and then released to their families. None of the kids could say who it was that had taken them. They really couldn't give any kind of description because of those damn stupid-ass pantyhose over their heads. All they could say was that the guys looked like Easter bunnies. A team was sent to the quarry to dig up the van and search for clues. They figured out that the only person that would have had keys to the quarry to be able to do this was Fred Woods, who was the son of the quarry owner. He was prime suspect number one. Ed was then put under hypnosis and was able to recall the license plate number of the other van. Once they put all these pieces in place, they were led to the other two fucking twat waffles in this case. So, 2 years before the kidnapping happened, Fred Woods and his two friends, James and Richard Schwanfeld, again, I'm probably saying that wrong, had been arrested for grand theft auto. So the three, at the time, had active arrest warrants. Investigators served and executed a search warrant on Fred's father's mansion. And here, they found one of the guns used in the kidnapping. So he was now officially tied to it. While searching, they also found a document that was labeled, are you ready? Plan.
Just plan.
Yep. In this, they documented every detail of the kidnapping. Along with a ransom note. They had meticulously planned this thing out for over a year. Months before they executed their plan, they began to bury the van. Investigators were able to gather witnesses that said they had actually noticed people out there digging in the months prior. They just didn't know why. Following this, Richard turned himself in, which he was the youngest of the three. And it seemed as though he was just kind of there. Like he was just along for the ride. He showed the most remorse for what they had done. Like, he recognized and understood what they had done was horrific. Like, he's not a good person at all, but at least I guess he had some kind of humanity. If that's what you want to call it. He acknowledges, you know, what they caused for the kids for the rest of their lives and how awful their actions were. So I guess that's something. So Richard turns himself in while James and Fred fled California. Fred went to Vancouver and was caught by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. And James was caught somewhere just outside of California. So James is very obviously not very smart. The three of them were put in a video lineup and are told to say phrases that the kids said they had used. The kids were able to identify all three men as their kidnappers.
Damn.
Following this, all three pled guilty to 27 counts of kidnapping for ransom and robbery. They were charged with 8 counts of bodily harm, but they refused to plead to that one because they said that was going to give them a mandatory life sentence without the possibility of parole. At their trials for the bodily harm charges, each one of the kids testified. And then on February 17th of 1978, all three were found guilty and given mandatory life sentences without the possibility of parole. But their lawyers appealed these convictions for the bodily harm charges because they claimed that although the events were traumatic, there was no real bodily harm as defined by law.
Okay.
A judge agreed and vacated those sentences. They were then resentenced for the charges they had pled to and were given life with the possibility of parole. So, where are they now? Richard, the one that turned himself in, and seemed to have full remorse for what he did, was granted parole in June of 2012. After spending 36 years in prison, only 3 years after his brother was paroled, James was granted parole. Fred spent over 4 decades in prison, not being paroled until 2022. Fred was labeled as the ringleader. The sheriff said Fred was definitely the ringleader and that James and Richard were just 2 dumbasses that did stupid shit. That's a direct quote, by the way.
Yeah.
Fred was said to have been a true psychopath and sociopath. Fred, now in his 70s, is still the same man he was in the 70s. While in prison, he broke all kinds of rules, which was why it took so long for him to get parole. He was caught countless times with contraband in his cell, and he was trying to run multiple businesses while in prison. So this whole thing, why did it happen? Like,
because they wanted money?
Fred couldn't wait to get access to his trust fund.
Okay.
This guy had a $100 million trust fund waiting, but he couldn't wait until he hit the specific age.
Which is what?
I'm not sure. I couldn't find where it was. It was most likely probably like 30 or something, but there could have been a thing where, you know, in order to have it, he may have had to get married. Like, I'm not sure what the...
Yeah, some other stipulation.
Yeah, exactly. I just know that he had to be a certain age. For sure, just don't know what the age was. Instead of waiting and getting a job until he could have access to it, he decided to rope in his 2 friends who were in debt because they're idiots.
Okay.
Into his plan to kidnap kids for ransom. This is known for sure because in 2015, when James went before the parole board, he said, quote, "We needed multiple victims to get multiple millions. And we picked children because children are precious. The state would be willing to pay ransom for them and they don't fight back. They're vulnerable and they will mind you."
What a way to look at it.
Yeah. So following the whole experience, the kids were given a trip to Disneyland and the California School Employees Association in Sacramento presented Ed with the association's citation for outstanding community service. Quote, "particularly to 26 precious Chowchilla school children." The award was given by the governor and he got many more heroism awards after this. Then, 5 weeks after the kidnapping, the entire town of Chowchilla created and celebrated Ed Ray and Children's Day, which is now celebrated every single year.
Awesome.
A San Francisco psychiatrist wrote a book about the kidnappings, later titled Too Scared to Cry, and in it she wrote, "In 1976, we didn't know much about childhood trauma, much less how to treat it. Despite their varied backgrounds, every Chowchilla kid I interviewed suffered from PTSD symptoms for years after the kidnapping and burial alive. Many of the kids well into their adulthood suffered sleeping problems because, obviously, they were terrified of the dark. They had constant nightmares and many phobias," which, yeah.
Comes with it, yeah.
Many went on to have substance abuse issues, legal problems. But despite all of that, most of them were able to turn their lives around. Many still to this day suffer from nightmares caused by the PTSD, but they've been able to find healthy ways to cope with and move on with their lives. The parents of the kids said for a long time after this happened, their kids would wake up in the middle of the night screaming, They would come running into their room thinking they were being chased. And at the time, before these guys were caught, it was even worse. They said that it was unbearable because the kids were terrified that these guys were going to come get them. So Ed at this point is then and even still now hailed as a hero. But he was humble about it, and he had never acknowledged that he was a hero. His kids went on to say, because Ed was a father, they went on to say that Ed loved kids his entire life, along with his children. He had grandchildren. He had great-grandchildren. And they all said he was an amazing father, a fantastic grandfather, and an even better great-grandfather. Ed felt that it was his duty to protect them all. About all of this, Ed said, quote, "I had to protect these kids. I had to make them feel like everything was going to be okay. Because even if they were dying that day, I wanted them to die thinking that everything was okay. And I wanted to make sure these kids weren't dying that day. My main goal was to get these kids back to their parents."
They were just lucky to move that manhole cover.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah. I had watched a movie is Netflix. I think it was on Netflix. What? I can't remember the name of it now that I'm trying to tell you. I don't know. I watched it last week. I think it was like They Took All Our Children. I can't remember what it's called, but I think it was on Netflix or Amazon Prime, one of the two. But in it, they had obviously those movies, like they're based off of these stories and some things are, you know, dramatized.
Mm-hmm.
But in it, Fred had wanted the younger boy to put a third battery on the manhole cover. But he's like, no, that's enough. So if they would have put that third battery on there, they probably wouldn't have been able to move the manhole cover.
And they're lucky they had a box over the opening, though, too.
Yeah, because it kind of kept everything from getting, like, muddy or whatever.
Well, or for a different plus reason. It gave them room to dig out.
Yeah. Yeah. So Ed lived to be 91 years old, passing away in May of 2012. An article written about Ed's passing in the New York Times stated that each one of the children he saved that day were by his side when he passed.
That's awesome.
Each one talked to him, visited him, and they each had a friendship with him from the time they got out of that hole until the day that he died.
I mean, at least they stayed connected like that.
One of the survivors, Ray, although he wouldn't talk about what happened, collected newspaper clippings about the kidnappings. He had bought the school bus for $500 because he didn't want it to go to the scrapyard. He felt this was important. They had survived this, and he wanted the bus to stay the way it was. His son later said, quote, "He parked it in the barn, and he'd go out and start it every once in a while. He kept it for many years, and then he ended up giving it to an old equipment museum in La Grande, where it's still there for public viewing today." So he wanted, basically, we survived this.
But it's the school bus, not what they were trapped in.
Yeah, but they were taken from the school bus. So I think to Ray as a survivor was, this was part of it. This, you know, we went through this, we survived this, this is proof of that. And it shouldn't just go to the scrapyard like it means nothing.
All right.
And I think that's why he bought it and kept it. Which I could be wrong, obviously, but I believe that's why. Now it sits in a museum. So following Ed's passing, many of the kids returned to that bus in the museum and wrote messages for Ed on the outside of it.
Cool.
Yeah. And that's the end of it. That's the 1976 Chowchilla bus kidnapping.
And it's still there to this day, huh?
From all accounts that I could find, yeah.
Good story.
This is why our children will never ride a bus.
Yeah, but what's the chances of our children? I mean, what's the chances of it even happening?
I know, but still, just the thought of it.
We live in Iowa.
Stresses me the fuck out.
Iowa's getting bad. Nobody move here. Not kidnappings, but I mean, it's just, don't move here.
I think everywhere is bad.
It is.
Oh, here it is. Okay, I knew I had wrote it down somewhere. Okay, so the movie that is based on this case, it's on Prime Video. It's called Vanished Without a Trace. And it's really good. It's not a documentary. Like I said, obviously some things are dramatized and some things are false, but it's really good. It's a really good movie. There's also a documentary where they talk to the survivors and talk about what happened, which that one's good too. It's also on Prime or Max. It's called Chowchilla. You won't watch them, but the listeners might.
Yeah. I don't watch anything.
So before we end today's episode, like I said at the beginning, I have some numbers and statistics to throw at you to start this month off. So now technically today's case is a multiple child abduction. I'm going to save those numbers for later in the month. They're going to be worked into a different case. So I'm going to give you the numbers and statistics for single child abductions now. And those will be weaved into a case in a couple weeks. So according to childfindofamerica.org, there is an estimated 2,300 children that go missing in the United States every day. If you break that down, that means every 40 seconds a child goes missing. And that equals to around 840,000 cases of missing children every year. And those are the ones that get reported missing.
That's a lot. People need to stop fucking kidnapping.
If only it were that easy.
I'd go out and kill the kidnappers.
So these missing children are broke up into five different categories for the reason to which they went missing. These include benign reasons, runaways or throwaways, lost, stranded or injured, family abductions, and stranger abductions. Most of these abductions are resolved within hours. There are many where a child goes missing for an extended period of time or permanently. Those numbers are smaller than the ones that are found, but it does still exist. So family abductions account for half of all reported abductions in the U.S. These are typically committed by another parent and have a higher number of female abductees than any other type of abduction. These are normally children under the age of 6 and are normally a result of a bitter divorce and child custody battles. These situations are very unique because oftentimes the child doesn't want to leave the person that took them, or other family members may be involved in helping aid and abet the abducting family. So in most children, in half of missing children, that is the case. Stranger abductions make up about 27% of all child abductions. These abductions have the highest number of missing female and teenage victims. These are often associated with other crimes rather than simply wanting to take a child. And I feel like we all know what that means without me having to lay it out. Then there are runaways, which raise a very serious issue. These kids often become homeless and are in very dangerous situations. Statistics say that 1 in 7 children between the ages of 10 and 18 will run away from home. And children between the ages of 12 and 17 are at a greater risk of becoming homeless than adults. 75% of runaways are female, and between 6 to 22% of those females are pregnant. Between 20 to 40% of these runaways identify with the LGBTQ community, and half of all runaways are trying to escape physical abuse at home, while 38% are trying to escape emotional abuse, and 17% of runaways reported being victims of sexual abuse by a family member or someone within their household.
Crazy.
These children face a much greater risk than people realize. They have a higher chance of anxiety, depression, suicide, poor health, and low self-esteem. And they are much more likely to be found and forced into prostitution, drug sales, and other types of illegal activity. In many cases, the child who is missing or has been abducted has a physical or mental disability, which makes finding them much harder. When a child is developmentally disabled, the child may have difficulty communicating with others, so they may not be able to express that they had been taken, where they live, or who they are. These children are especially susceptible to being abducted because many times they are unaware of the dangers around them. Those with physical disabilities are also harder to be found and returned because oftentimes they are not provided with the medical care that they need once they're taken. And they're either harmed by the abductor, become ill due to the lack of medical care, and are dumped somewhere or are unable to provide any information that could help get them home. So one thing that was put into place to assist the finding of abducted children or those that have run away is the Amber Alert System, which I covered that case in episode 5, titled 8 Minutes, The Unsolved Abduction and Murder of Amber Hagerman and Her Legacy. In that episode, I talked about Amber's story, the legacy she left behind, which was the Amber Alert System. According to missingkids.org, which is the website for NCMEC, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, children of white and black racial descent account for the highest numbers in children missing between the ages of 0 to 17 years old. Their stats show that from January 1st of 2023 to December 31st of 2023, there were 28,886 children reported to them as missing, and these numbers include young adults aged 18 to 20 years old. 1,000 of these reports were labeled as endangered runaways. A little less than 1,000 were family abductions. A little less than 100 were reported as lost, injured, or otherwise missing, which means that they weren't taken. They could have just, you know, not come home for another reason. Another 90-some were abducted by non-family members, so stranger abductions. And then about 850 were missing young adults. So that 18 to 20-year-old age. Nearly every one of these cases were resolved, and the child or young adult was found, but 2023 ended, with NCMEC still having 3,580 active missing child and young adult cases from that year alone. Over the 40 years that NCMEC has been active, their hotline has received more than 5 million calls about a missing child. They have assisted in bringing home more than 426,000 children. And in 2023, they made this even better by creating and placing a QR code on their website. This QR code allows anyone to simply scan the code with their phone's camera. It takes you directly to the website and shows any missing child in the NCMEC system within a 50-mile radius of where you are. So along with the Amber Alert system that I just told you about, they also have Team Adam. Team Adam was named in honor of Adam Walsh, which I'm going to do that case at some point. This is a rapid response team that offers assistance to law enforcement on site. They help families get them through the trauma and the heartbreak that they face in these moments of their child being missing. And in 2023, Team Adam was activated in 57 separate cases that involved critically missing children. And they provided assistance in 146 long-term missing child cases. Since Team Adam was incepted in 2003, they have been deployed 1,297 times, which assisted in matters that involved 1,490 missing children. In 2023 alone, NCMEC tracked 298 attempted abductions that involved 381 children. And since 2005, they have tracked 15,573 incidents that involved 19,705 children. So NCMEC provides forensic services to law enforcement, medical examiners, and coroners to assist in their efforts of finding missing children, to give those that have lost their names back, and develop leads in child abduction homicides. NCMEC is where the age-progressed photos that we see come from. After years of being missed, a photo of a 3-year-old little boy won't help. So 6 years later, NCMEC artists create that now 9-year-old little boy's face in order to help find where he is today. NCMEC believes that every child deserves a safe childhood, something us here on Monstrous agree with. I myself didn't have the best childhood, and most of my memories aren't happy ones. And us, as parents ourselves, can't imagine life anything other than happy and safe for not only our children, but any child. NCMEC's commitment is to never stop. The threats to children continue to evolve with the times, and there, they work every day to identify those threats to protect children. Their commitment to children doesn't falter. It never has, and it never will. They continue to grow and change with the times, just as those that prey on children do, just as the rest of us should as well. I want to end this episode with NCMEC's impact statement, one that I hope everyone hearing will take to heart and learn from. Quote, "No child should suffer the traumatic realities of going missing or being exploited. While many still do, at the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, we are committed to recovering and protecting every child while working to prevent future harm. For 40 years, our organization has stood as a beacon of hope, dedicated to safeguarding the security and well-being of society's most vulnerable members, our children. With unwavering commitment and advocacy, NCMEC serves as a guardian, a lifeline, and a force for change." End quote. It is so easy to turn the other cheek and ignore what you see. Many see something and think it's not my business, it's not my place. But instead of thinking this way, make it your business. Don't stand by and watch. Follow your gut, because it's almost always right. Step in and say something or call for help if you're worried about your own safety. If you're wrong, you can apologize. But could you live with yourself knowing you stood by, believing it was nothing, but it was actually something after all? Stand up, step in, speak up, and be a voice for the voiceless. And that's all I got for this one.
Good.
That's it for this one.
I ain't got nothing.
Next week's not going to be a happy ending.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm not sad. I'm not for the sad, sappy, sad shit. So somebody else might have to sit in on that one.
Yeah, the next one's a cold case.
Well, I mean, if it ain't.
Just a state over from here, actually.
Oh, cool.
Yep.
All right.
All right. Well, that's it. I got nothing else. I know Mike's not as talkative and entertaining as Manny is.
It's only my third one, so sorry, guys.
Okay, so we'll be back next week for our cold case. That one's going to be kind of rough, so everybody will have a week to prepare for it. As always, the photos for this episode can be found on our Facebook page. You can find all of that in the episode description. Please make sure you give us a rate and a review. Don't forget to subscribe so you get notifications when these new episodes are released. We hope you keep listening and remember to
watch for monsters.
And don't kill people. Bye, y'all.
Bye, y'all.